if they would stop and defend, they would easily kill us. But they didn't think about that. They dropped down at the end of that forest. It was a better position for us because we was on trees and we was moving from a tree to tree. First time we was walking towards people that that they had the order to kill us and we had the order to kill them. And first time we knew that those people would kill us if we would not kill them.
Welcome to Combat Story. I'm Ryan Fugit, and I served Warzone Tours as an Army Attack helicopter pilot and CIA officer over a 15-year career. I'm fascinated by the experiences of the elite in combat. On this show, I interview some of the best to understand what combat felt like on their front lines. This is Combat Story. Today, we hear a very different combat story from Sergei Diadkin, a Ukrainian patriot, Special Forces and Territorial Defense Force soldier, fighting in Ukraine against Russia today. Sergei fought back some of the first Russian incursions into Kiev and was in the city of Shiastia in eastern Ukraine, just 20 miles from the Russian border, when the shelling, tanks, and invasion began. It's ironic because Shiastia means happiness in English. Sergei helped capture some of the first Russian prisoners of the war, and you'll note in the discussion that he treated them humanely, which we've seen is not the case for both sides in this war. We found Sergei thanks to Ryan Hendrickson, who many will recall from two previous Combat Story episodes, where Ryan described having his leg mangled by an IED, only to return to combat and earn a Silver Star. In true Ryan fashion, he voluntarily left the U.S. and his entire life behind to help the people in Ukraine. While in Kiev, Ryan met Sergei, and they connected over a shared Special Forces background. Sergei's Special Forces operational tempo was so high that he was sent to the Territorial Defense Forces to escort humanitarian aid efforts as a break. During his downtime, Sergei was kind enough to share the heartbreaking stories that he has experienced since Russia invaded. I hope you enjoy this important and unique insight into the experiences of a frontline soldier fighting against Russia who, at such a young age, can differentiate between the Russian people and a Russian tyrant, who can already forgive and who just wishes people could go back to a peaceful coexistence. You'll notice we're using a translator for this episode. Sergei speaks English well, but I wanted him to be able to express himself more in his native language. We've also got Ryan Hendrickson just off screen for most of the interview, helping provide some additional context, as his and Sergei's paths are now intertwined. For those listening and who aren't watching the video on YouTube or Spotify, Sergei is sitting at his army base and wearing his military fatigues with his weapons slung throughout the interview, reminding us that when the interview ended and we all go back to our lives, he went back to war. This is one I'll never forget, and I hope you enjoy this as much as I did. Sergei, thank you so much for taking the time to share your story today. We're so excited to hear what this is like from your perspective. And I just wanted to kick it off by asking, we have a mutual friend in common, Ryan Hendrickson, who many people who listen to this show know. I was just curious how you two know each other, if you could share that.
We met each other when we started helping volunteers at the organization. When we start to unload the packages, he saw a really big guy and he was talking English. And I was really interested who's that guy, because he looked like a true American soldier.
I love it. And actually the Instagram coordination that we did with the three of us was really funny, because I felt like I was talking with two other Americans with you on there, Sergei. It was very fun coordinating this. So actually, I wanted to ask if you could share with us, Sergei, what unit are you with today, just so people have that context, and then we'll talk a little bit about how you grew up.
На сьогоднішній день жизнь немножко усложнилась.
So it's a bit tough today. My family is a part of from me. Lots of friends I lost in the war. My home is broken, destroyed. I lost my job. But I didn't want to just sit. When you see on the street happening, something happening like that, when you see people like me doing war, I would not forgive myself for sitting on the spot. And that's why I came to Kyiv, to my friend Daniel. He offered me a job and said, we can help lots of people. So I said yes, and that day I bought the ticket to Kyiv.
And is it the Territorial Defense Forces? Is that the unit now?
Yeah, it is. Yes.
Okay. Just so people understand, could you explain what the role is of the Territorial Defense Forces?
When the invasion started on Ukraine, there was so much people in all over the place, and it was not enough Ukrainian army to protect everything. So people understood they need to fight for their land, and they took the guns and went for the war. Yeah, we have really brave people because they wasn't with the good guns or any guns, but they still was going out and do the fighting, and they really helped our soldiers because they took a part of Russian army on themselves.
Okay. Before we talk more about the military time, I want to ask about Sergei's time as a kid growing up in Ukraine. And in particular, I think people in America have no idea what it's like growing up somewhere else. So just what was it like being a kid in Ukraine years ago?
Я вырос в семье обычных двух рабочих людей. Отец работал на пекарне, а мать воспитывала.
So I grew up in a normal family of father was working in the bakery and mom was growing us as a kid. It was a bit hard because it was a fall of like not Russian Federation, Soviet Union.
Soviet
yes.
Union. Yep.
Не было денег, поэтому отцу приходилось работать на двух работах.
We had no money, so my father was working on two or three jobs at the time. But as a childhood, it was okay. We play soccer in the winter time. We play hockey. We gathered around the fire and play instruments and like guitar or something. We played hide and seek in a house or outside. It's not like now we didn't sit at the computer or at the phone like we do now. All day we would spend outside, and every day we would find some trouble on our butt.
if your parents weren't in the military, what made you want to join the military?
When I was growing up, I really loved the movie. The movies about the American police. It was really inspiring me. So I really liked the guns and the knives when I was a kid also, and I was pretend to play with them. And every year as I was growing, I still liked them more and more. It was not going away. So because of the movies about the police and about wars and things like that, I grew up and it's inspired me to join the army.
How did your parents feel about you joining the army?
They didn't really like it. They said it's really dangerous, you will die somewhere. But I was stubborn, and I'm usually a stubborn person in life. So they couldn't change my choice, even though they tried a few years to do it. So with the time, they just humbled themselves and just accepted the choice that he made.
That's a very common answer that we hear from a lot of Americans also, that their parents don't want them doing that, but eventually accept it. I'd like to ask about the relationship between someone like Sergei and other people who are Russian when he was growing up. So was it normal to have Russian friends when he was in grade school?
Когда я рос, до войны у нас особо не было претензий в стране России.
When I was growing up, it was we didn't have any bad thoughts about Russia. Nobody thought about that, and my parents didn't thought also about are they enemies or not. We was just living life and trying to make money. But when it happened in the east of Ukraine in 2014, our relationship with Russia like fell down 80%, I would say.
Did you have friends who were Russian when you were growing up, Sergey?
It was a lot of friends. In 2014-15, when the first invasion happened, a lot of people didn't react on it, and we still was friends. But when this war happened, the full invasion, then all of them was stopped. They stopped communication with me at all.
When can you tell us what age were you when you joined the military?
18.
18. Okay. And I think, if I understand correctly, did you go directly into the infantry, special forces? What was the initial path for you?
So first thing I did, I went to police patrol, but I didn't like it. So I decided, because I wanted something more. I wanted more activity and, I guess, more weapons. I understood that I want to defend my land, and I like to spend time with inside the army with my colleagues. I like that time. Yeah. So after patrol police, I went to the special forces. Then there I found my true family, people who were surrounding me. I could trust them fully with my life. Lots of training, lots of different weapons. Each day I loved it more and more. We did a lot of different special missions, and I was understanding that I like it more and more.
I don't know if Ryan's still over there, but it's sounding a whole lot like this guy I know, Ryan Hendrickson. Sergey, this is super interesting. I wonder if you could tell us about the type of training process to become special forces in Ukraine, because in America, it's a very difficult process. Could you share a little bit of what it's like to make it in special forces?
I understood that here and in America, it's a bit different, the training and stuff. We really had different tactics, different weapons, and a territorial difference between USA and Ukraine. But I know a lot of people came, Americans came to Ukraine, and we went there to change, to give the knowledge we have, like,
yeah, for sharing knowledge.
Yeah. We start our morning from exercises. Then we was exercising with guns, inside the house, yeah. Mm-hmm. Cleaning the rooms, yes, and things like that. We didn't stay on one place. We every day was something new for us. It was sometimes that hard that people who went first day there, they couldn't handle it, and they was quitting. Yeah, quitting the first day.
Было сложно всем, но очень помогало ребятам та мысль, когда они понимали, что.
It was hard for everybody, but it was helping the thought that we all together and we like a family. And the word family, it's not just like a word. It's you need to feel, you need to live it, and only then you understand what does it mean.
Can you say a little bit more about the family aspect, because you brought it up a couple times now? So when you say true family, what does that mean for you?
So my people who was there, everyone from that group was like my brother. I would trust everything to them, like my family, my girlfriend. And the same it was from them to me.
Can you tell us when you joined the military? Like what year? It's before 2014, right?
Yeah, he said 18 years, yes. 2018, he joined the full army.
Okay, so it was after 2014, okay. After that initial invasion.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
He had 18 years old at the time. And it was 2018, and he was 18 then.
Got it. Okay. So in 2018, when he joined, and Sergey, once you go through the training, can you take us to the first time that you're in combat and tell us what it was like for you?
I couldn't say when actually it was happening, but I remember the situation. So we had information that the spy group went in. We was in the city and the group was at the forest. There was no additional information, so we had to go there and look ourselves. And the first time it was really scary, because the place where we was going to was better tactically than the place they was going from. It was, if they would stop and defend, they would easily kill us. But they didn't think about that. They dropped down at the end of that forest. And when we went into the forest, we dropped a car at the beginning of the forest and went by our... we split two groups, the distance between people. Everyone did cross on themselves, and they and we start to walk towards. And when we was closer and closer coming there, somebody heard the noise. The first time we heard the noise of the gun, somebody was checking the gun, and we understood where it from. But the forest wasn't big. They also heard when we was walking.
В этой ситуации мы приняли более выгодное для нас, грубо говоря, замаскировались за деревьями.
It was a better position for us because we was on trees and we was moving from a tree to tree. And after 20 minutes, we make them go out of the forest. And who was left, they also had the car or something like that. And they just went away. Everybody was scared then because it was first operation then. First time we was walking towards people that that they had the order to kill us and we had the order to kill them. And first time we knew that those people would kill us if we would not kill them. And it was the first, I believe it was the first operation when we remembered. We didn't lose anybody and went back to the base safely. Yeah.
And if I understand correctly, when you say a spy group, was that like a reconnaissance unit that was moving?
Yeah.
It was the Russian infiltrators that they were trying to make breach into Kyiv with.
Okay. And Sergey, were there any shots fired in that first engagement, or was it just moving forces? Yeah,
they shot at them to get them out of the forest.
And I guess for you, Sergey, after that mission, how did you feel about maybe just the choice of being a soldier, the fact that you were on a mission like that? What was that like for you personally?
Когда я приехал на базу,
when I went to the base,
я понял, что надо еще больше работать над тактикой, над стрельбой, над всем, еще больше себя развивать.
I understood that I need to work more on myself, on a tactic, on a fighting and shooting. That situation brought me to the thought that I need to open my mind for things like that more. So I did my calculation of mistakes and understood that I did the right choice to be a soldier.
Does the unit do the calculation of mistakes together to talk about what went right and what went wrong?
Да, мы сели в круг и начали, мы часа четыре разговаривали об этом задании.
And yeah, we was in a circle and we was like around 4 hours talking about that.
Wow, that's interesting. Okay, next, I'd just like, Sergey, if you can take us to another mission that you were on where it was maybe more difficult, more dangerous, more challenging, and talk to us about what that was like, please.
After that, it was lots of missions.
And they все, в принципе, были сложными.
They all was difficult, but time taught me to be cold blood. And every time when a mission was end and we was start a new one, we didn't think much about those missions that was before. We was just doing analysis. One of the interesting missions was when this war invasion started. We was at the city Shasta, which is translated like happiness, Lugansk region. We was the first, one of the first who was Russia was shelling. Russia
okay.
was shelling.
Yeah.
I woke up at 4:20 in the morning because it was really loud. My friend was nearby, and we was thinking that's the generator working, but it was artillery that was working on us. So we start to wake up and get our stuff. We understood that they. Shelling at our city, so all our group went into the hall. A few minutes we was thinking what to do, and we decided to leave from our base. At the information we had, we knew that the tanks and other vanishes was coming in. So we start to running away from our base into the outside the city. It was hard to see surrounding around because there was shellings and it was killing people around. And yeah, it was the chaos. We wasn't the whole group. We spread out a lot. With me, there's three people came with me and we got to be together. Nobody understood what to do. I took the radio and went to talk to our main leaders. We decided to meet up at a certain spot. We got together and meet up with another group. So after that we went inside the city. We meet with more army people. And so half of our group was helping now our artillery in the city. And another half of the group was covering them so they would not go from inside to them. It was hard to work because they was shelling on us and it wasn't stopping at all. When we was waiting for our tanks and they came, we got information that six of their cars went
in. One.
Like those
the Russian infantry.
Yes.
Нам было задание, нам надо было уничтожить эти группы.
So we had a task to destroy those groups. When we cleared one of them, we basically burned the car, but the people who was in went away from the car, and so we had to find those people. And when we start to look for them at the city, we was walking by one house, and one of the doors from the house, from the under the house basement was open. We wouldn't even decide to go into, but when they was there, the sling, they saw the sling from the gun on somebody's hand. So one of our people saw that. So we took our guns and get them ready, and took the grenade. And told them to come out, or we throw the grenade in. They throw out the guns and went outside. There was four of them. We was the first people who took prisoners, yes.
Were they wearing uniforms, Sergey?
Да. В чем был момент? У них была только распуска, у них не было брони.
Yeah, they was in the military form, but they didn't have the plates.
Yeah, yes, body armor.
Clothes was really dirty. It was more like homeless people. One interesting moment, when we was asking them questions, they told that one of the lady in the house, she gave them vodka and some food, and basically give them food, basically. We was shocked because those people came and destroyed our houses, killed the people, but she gave them food.
Yeah. Wow. And so this was a Russian infantry unit that you had captured, kind of the first prisoners that had been taken in the conflict.
Yeah.
Jeez. Wow. I wonder if you could tell me, Sergey, do you look at all Russian people the same, or are you upset with the Russian government? Or all of Russia?
I don't look at them the same way. But we have a saying in Ukrainian. It's like, in every family, there is a bad person.
Yeah.
Let's say that.
Unfortunately, in this situation, there are a lot of idiots.
But in this situation, I understood that in their family, they have lots of idiots. There is normal people there. There's people who don't want a war, but it's not a lot of them. Most of Russians, they really aggressive to us. I would say for Russian soldiers, I have really lots of negativity. But for normal people, not that much. I don't want to have a one perspective for everyone. So I wouldn't say for myself that they all bad people.
You mentioned earlier that after doing a lot of these missions, you kind of had, I think you said, cold blood. Can you talk more about what that means or when that happened?
With every mission, you start to get everything not super emotional. When you see death and destruction, you get used to it. So there's no much influence of excitement on you next time. Something like that.
Do you feel like you're a different person now than before you joined?
Absolutely.
100%, yeah.
Yeah. What for a lot of the Americans out there, what would you like them to know about the experiences of you and your Ukrainian countrymen today?
I wouldn't want people would go through what we going. It's really hard and painful experience for the for the Americans. I would say lots of trainings, be prepared, be strong, don't wait when someone will do something for you. Love each other, appreciate each other, and appreciate every moment you spend with your family, and be humans.
You mentioned that you lost people, you lost your job, your home, and then you mentioned that you lost people that you knew. Did you lose people on any of these missions that you were on?
Yeah, some of those he lost on some of the missions. Some of his people don't go. He have no information about them, and no service. He can't reach them. Some people left the country, and he understand that he cannot see them anymore.
If you could ask people who are listening to do something to help, what would you ask them to do, or what would you suggest that they do?
Yes. I would ask to solve every problem they have with peace, help people who need help, to not wait that somebody will do something for them, but in every situation, still keep the cold blood, be yourself. I mean, the main point is to bring peace, not the war.
If I can ask, President Zelensky, he's very popular here in America. What do you think of him? Like, what, as a soldier, as you look at him, what do you think?
Once I heard the joke. I didn't remember which country it was. The joke been said by some big politician. So how was it? Now we have a president that everybody loves, but this president in Ukraine.
Love it. Yeah, he's a popular guy, and I think everybody's so impressed what he's done and stood there and remained in Ukraine with everyone. I love seeing it.
In the beginning, nobody believed in him. Everybody was thinking it was just funny guy who went from the TV. But with the time, he showed that he's the best. My only opinion is if we would have another person as a president, we would lose the war, because it's a full-scale tragic situation that he tried to solve, and he's doing really good.
Yeah. Hey, Ryan, are you still over there?
Yes.
Would you mind coming on camera so I could ask you something about you and Sergey?
Yeah. I can't tell.
Yeah, maybe a little bit more if you can keep moving over there.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Hey, I'd love to know, you obviously don't have to be in Ukraine, right? You left behind a whole lot to be there. What was the decision like for you to do that?
Yeah, so it was crazy. I was kind of at a point in my life to where I was looking for answers, and I had the contracting job, and Afghanistan 2020, 2021 as a contractor, and I saw the way I saw how Afghanistan unfolded for us, especially when I left, and so I was I was talking to my buddy Dave Cunningham, and yeah, we were just kind of going over life, and it's like, man, I don't know what I want to do. I'm not fulfilled. I'm not happy.
And yeah, I did just joking around. I was like, fuck it, I'll go to Ukraine. And he's like, really? What do you want to do in Ukraine? It's like, I don't really want to fight anymore. I've done enough trigger pulling in my life, but I want to make a difference. I just don't know how. But don't worry about it. I'm just being emotional. And he said, well, I know this group that's in Kyiv, and they go out and they help, and they bring food out to these areas that have been cut off. And that's how I met him, was because they roll security for us, is what they do. And so, but we go out to these areas that have been cut off. I mean, myself and Volka, we were in Bucha with him, 48 hours after the Russians left. And we're bringing food and hope, and these people are coming out of just rubble. I mean, there's no other word for it. It's not a building, it's not a structure, it's just rubble. And they are, they look like ghosts. Like, I don't know how else to explain it. They just like look like ghosts. And they're not sure if this is a game, if this is a trick, if this is, are the Russians gone? Are they gonna try and kill us still? I mean, and then once they see the food and the caring and the hope, then the emotions start to run. And it's that I found out what I've been missing. You know what I mean?
Do you feel like this is kind of the missing piece for you?
Yeah, 100% it is. And then when, then the hard questions start to come and the stories start to come out. And again, I'm not a human rights investigator. I wasn't there, but I mean, the situation, like it looks the way it looks, and the common sense test of the look and then the people. There's been some really bad stuff that's happened here. And I mean, you know, my story with Afghanistan, and I've never seen anything like human suffering the way I've seen out here, Bucha, Irpin, Demirka, just different places like that. And there's a lot of stuff that's coming to light, but the human suffering is, I've just never seen anything on this scale before.
And I know you've traveled a ton, Ryan, like just personal travel, and then obviously deployed many times. And what's it been like meeting somebody like Sergey sitting next to you? What's that relationship been like?
Oh, you got a family, you're brothers. Yeah, it's easy. Yeah, it's simple. You know, I've made a whole new family here. It's great. So, and to the point to where, this is a complex situation here, but yeah, it's, it's such a family. Like he was saying, I want to bring my wife out here so she could help too, because I know for sure, without a shadow of a doubt, she will be, safe and taken care of and everything.
Is there a way for other people to support whatever initiative you're doing, Ryan? I know you didn't ask for this in any way, but if what you're doing could help, is there something we can share with people?
So YWAM, it's YWAM Kyiv, and that they're the organization that is, we're getting all this food in, all the donations that are coming in and everything like that. And we're taking them out. And so what Sergey didn't tell you was, because of the amount of locations he's been in combat at, he's kind of on R&R here to pull security for an American and some, you know what I'm saying? So this is kind of his break from just basically nonstop. I mean, Donbass, you're going to know what that's all about. So, but yeah, YWAM Kyiv, Operation Shield Foundation, those, but I'll warn people, do your research. Don't take my word for a charity organization. Do your research, find a vetted organization, because people are going to try and take advantage of a really bad situation, and it's disgusting. But do your research and make sure you understand what your donation, what your money is going to. You have to do your research. I'm telling you what I think is good, but please, whoever sees this, do your research.
And then just really last question, Sergey, for you, that I'd asked Ryan, I ask all my guests, is there anything you carry with you when you go into combat that has like a good luck charm, something that somebody gave you that's important to you that you always want to have on you?
Smile, talisman.
That's his talisman.
It's a gift for my parents. It saved me all time, many times.
It was a cross.
That's great. Sergey, Vovka, Ryan, thank you so much for this time. Is there anything else you'd like to share with what's going on that we could tell people?
It's catastrophe.
And
it's we need to stop it as soon as possible. And we only can stop if we will be united. And we really appreciate the help of other countries, and we understand it's really needed.
Well, thanks very much, you three. Thanks for what you're doing. You guys are fighting where the world needs it. So please stay safe, Sergey, Vovka, Ryan, all of you, especially where you're going next. Thanks for the time.
Hey, man, I appreciate you doing this. The world needs to know.
Yeah. And speaking of Patreon, we've got one clip from this interview that we did not air during the show, and we will instead include that on our Patreon site. The reason is not to drive people to Patreon. The reason is that it's a particularly sensitive and somewhat unusual story of combat that I did not want the Russian government to get a hold of and misuse for an information operation. On Patreon, we've got people who are dedicated to the combat story community, and I know that would never fall into the hands of people that would misuse it, which is the reason that I'm posting it there. So if you're interested, you can head over to our Patreon site for more. Thanks. I want to take just a moment at the end of this program to recognize the people fighting in Ukraine, the civilians, of course, but the soldiers and those supporting them, like Sergey, Ryan Hendrickson, who left everything behind to help. The Ukrainian forces, Zelensky, who's refused to leave and stood up in the face of a tyrant. And Aiden Aslan, who many of us know and breaks our hearts to know that he's been captured. And he had nothing to do with Ukraine 10 years ago and fell in love with the people, the culture, and served for years there. And he's paying a price now. And I know he'll be back one day. But recognizing these people who are fighting on behalf, honestly, of many countries in the world. And I just hope that we can do what we can to help them. And that when this is all over, we'll go back to a more peaceful society where Ukrainian and Russian kids play soccer together, sit around a campfire and play guitars. And this is put behind us. Thanks for tuning in, everyone.